This doesn't surprise me at all. The White House wants someone gone, like, and it's not Joe Biden, really gone. And they're trying and they're trying, and well, they're just not making any headway. We're going to get into this sort of secret plot to get rid of one person in particular. I'll tell you, she's the least of their problems. We're going to get into that. Plus, Hunter Biden is trying a new one. I guess he's channeling Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump is suing ABC News and George Stephanopoulos. So Hunter's like, hey, I can do that too. Let me just go sue Fox News. That's the latest and greatest. Just breaking right now, ladies and gentlemen. Plus, we can talk about this disgraced strategist extraordinaire for the Democrat Party, Donna Brazile, who's going on various shows. And now she's picking a fight with the legal advocate for Trump. And let me just say, she's not a lawyer and she fully admits this. Therefore, don't engage in the fight, right? Because the lawyer is going to dance circles around you, which is exactly what happened. I got to show you this clip, plus much, much more, including highlights from that nerd prom that I'm very happy not to have been at. Great to have you here. This is the Trish Regan Show. I am Trish. As I said, really good to have you here. We begin today on a new report that the Biden White House is trying to oust, or did very aggressively try to oust, KJP from the ranks last fall. This is coming to us courtesy of the New York Post. The Post. Inside the failed White House coup to oust Biden press secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, they write. It looks like the DEI stuff's coming back to haunt them. I mean, I don't know what you're going to do. She's an African-American woman and she's gay. So, you know, that's a couple boxes right there. Despite the fact that she can't do her job, she still has that job, right? I mean, she really can't do that job. So what is it? I'll get back to you. Didn't Peppermint Patty have something else that she used to say? Like, I'll circle back. Well, KJP has coined a whole new term. Watch.
Las Vegas, he told a story about recently talking to a French president who died in 1996.
I'm not even going to go down that rabbit hole with you, sir.
So the board has never convened. It never convened, and the board is pausing in the sense that it will not convene. Let me see if I have anything new for you on that. I think it's been a couple of days.
Hey, Drew, do we have one more of her? The one that the RNC put out, because that was just funny. It was like the 100 times she said, da-da-da. Okay, he's going to work on that. He's going to show me when. There we go. Yep, maybe it's coming. Maybe it's not. Anyway, I got to tell you. So I know Karine Jean-Pierre because Karine Jean-Pierre used to come on my show a lot when I was at Fox. She was actually a Fox News contributor. And we often wanted her on the show when, well, you know, you wanted to make sure you had another point of view being represented. But how do I say this? Oh, there was sort of always an angle, right, at Fox where you'd have the Democrat that really couldn't explain themselves. And she kind of always fit that bill. She was quite lovely, but she could never explain herself. And it was always really awkward when she would try and talk economics because, trust me, you know, and I know it's me, but you don't want to talk economics with me unless you really, really know what you're talking about because I live, sleep, eat, and breathe this stuff. And, you know, like Fed policy. I mean, I can walk out with the best of them. And let's face it, KJP cannot, like on anything. And as you look at this article, there's multiple incidents of that. But anyway, they're frustrated because she's always in that binder, always looking at her notes and then always saying things like this.
I don't have anything.
I won't make you listen to the 100 times, but you know, it's amazing because she's like in the same outfit, which means she's saying that in the exact same press conference. I don't have anything. Wow. Okay, we get it. You don't have anything. Well, apparently, the Biden White House is so distressed about his polls, so distressed about how he's being represented in the press, that as far back as last fall, they wanted to get rid of her. Mm-hmm. But like I said, kind of hard to do. According to the report, because they're denying it. They're like, oh, she's fantastic. Yeah, you keep telling yourselves that, guys. She's fantastic. According to this report in the New York Post, Anita Dunn, the wife of Biden's personal attorney, Bob Bauer, told colleagues that she had decided to call in prominent Democrats to explain, to tell Karine Jean-Pierre why, you know what? Your time is up, girl. Your time is up. You need to move on. So they tried. But she's clinging to the post. No. She's not going anywhere. I'm going to quote the source in the New York Post that said there were a number of people She asked to engage Corrine. I guess they wanted to have a little soft landing for her. There was an effort, according to the source, to have some outside folks who Corrine knows and trusts talk to her about why leaving last fall would have made a whole lot of sense for her career. After all, Jen Psaki, Peppermint Patty, look, she went on to great things. She's like hosting a digital show over there on MSNBC. And became an MSNBC analyst. I mean, maybe Corrine Jean-Pierre could go back to her old job at Fox News. I don't know. Anyway, they tried to offer something a little bit better. There was the opportunity to run Emily's List, I guess, and a few other things, but none of it struck her as interesting enough, and she preferred to stay in her place there at the White House. So they're frustrated. They're frustrated because they don't feel that she's best representing Joe Biden and the policies of Joe Biden. And there's also concern that she doesn't do her homework, according to this article, that she doesn't understand the nitty-gritty stuff and that she's always got her head buried in that binder. I can, again, tell you from personal experience, she is a lovely person. I really do mean that. A lovely, lovely woman. Very, very nice way about her, but does not understand what she's talking about. Okay. Like, and you kind of need to know, and you need to know what direction they're coming at you with. If you are in that position, you need to anticipate it. You need to be so knee deep in that policy that there's no way they're going to be able to run circles around you. And yet, what do? They, meaning the media, they run circles around her. In other words, the fact that the left is at all running circles, I mean, they don't even want to, right? You want to talk about a biased media. They don't want to have to run circles around Corrine Jean-Pierre, but she doesn't defend her positions enough. She makes it just too darn easy. And then you look at the poll numbers and they show you no one is buying into this administration right now. Nobody thinks that Joe Biden can do the job. Whether or not she's the reason, I actually don't think she is. I don't think she has anything to do with it. You could get a better press person. Of course you could. But it doesn't change the reality of what's going on the ground. And that is the fact that we have terrible inflation. That is the fact that we've got overseas conflicts. We've got what's going on college campuses all across America right now. And you have a border that is really messed up. I mean, really, really messed up. So that confluence of stuff is something that not even a press secretary, no matter how good she or he is going to be able to push back against. So it's wishful thinking for the White House. I get it. They would like to have her replaced. You notice they did bring in somebody else, did they not? They brought in the guy who was over at the Pentagon. He's actually been doing a whole lot more. Kirby, John Kirby, has been out there. Apparently, he's always been in a lot of these briefings. They didn't fully, totally trust her in some of these briefings. And so they'd always have Kirby nearby. He's done a couple of stints at the Pentagon as press secretary. You know, he was there during the Obama administration, and so he's kind of seasoned, and I think they want to really make sure that there's an adult in the room. So he's there all the time. He's been taking on more and more responsibility. She's taking a little less, but again, she's not going anywhere. I mean, I don't know. Maybe she'll just keep getting demoted. The White House wants you to know it's not a demotion. Promoting John Kirby has nothing to do with demoting KJP. But, you know, it's like I said, back at Bloomberg, back in the day, back when, for whatever reason, television was being run as a marketing arm for the Bloomberg terminals, like, you couldn't get fired if you tried, really, from Bloomberg television. The joke was, you could take an anchor, and at some point, he or she might be cutting tape overnight in radio or sweeping the bathroom floor. It didn't matter. They weren't losing their job. That may be like what's going on at the White House right now, especially for someone who checks all the boxes that she checks. So, yeah, no, you know, nothing to see here. Pentagon press secretary Kirby's not replacing her. He's not over her, except he is. And they can't get rid of her. I wish her luck. I really do. Maybe she'll go back to Fox. Again, none of this makes any difference, ladies and gentlemen. You can get the best press secretary in the world. And when you've got mega problems like we got going on right now, when you get inflation like we've got going on, gas prices up 40% from where they were back in the Trump presidency, hey, this stuff adds up. right? Eggs up nearly 50%. This is my favorite chart. I love to show you. Drew knows. We keep this one handy because it's just wild. Everything is higher. And that doesn't even include, by the way, mortgages, which are 66% higher on average, or rents, which are 22% and up higher on average. I mean, this is not a good financial picture. So is it any surprise that the polls tell you it's going to be a really uphill battle for one person in particular? Brand new poll out from CNN. CNN's commentator can't even totally believe what he's saying. They don't even show his face. You just have to hear the disbelief in his voice. All of these media people that are like, what is going on? How is this even possible? Mind you, remember, Donald Trump does not tend to poll that well because people don't actually want to say that they're going to vote for him, because that might mean they're a really, really bad person, right? The media has told you, you're a bad person if you actually support MAGA. That is not the Republican Party of yesteryear. That is a bad thing. And therefore, half the country is made up of bad people. So half the country sometimes is a little bit afraid during these polls. So they'll tell you everything that they don't like, which is why there's a 30-point spread in a recent Bloomberg poll between Donald Trump and Joe Biden when it comes to the border, and a 20-point spread on the economy. I mean, these are big, big issues for people. But then it kind of narrows out when you see what the actual numbers are, and sometimes you're just seeing like a 5 or 6 point difference. Well, this new CNN poll predicts there's going to be a winner.
Our new
and
poll,
it's not
which
Biden.
By SSRS,
I want you to hear this. I want you to
Biden,
hear this reporter deliver this.
And with our new poll, which was conducted by SSRS, finds Trump is leading Biden, who has ample work to do with his base and with independent voters who are breaking to his GOP rival. In a head-to-head race, 49% of voters say they'd pick Trump for president, compared to 43% for Biden. That's a 9-point Trump advantage with independent voters. And add in third-party candidates, and Trump's lead jumps even more. He has 42% to Biden's 33%, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. gets 16% of the vote. Our poll also underscores the challenges of incumbency, and that voters, 4 years later, have a better view of Trump's presidency compared to Biden's. 55% say Trump's time in office was a success, with only 39% saying the same about Biden's presidency.
Yeah, I mean, look at any of the numbers. Biden's not doing really well. In fact, he's actually the lowest of any president in some 70 years. Like, you got to go back 7 decades to find anybody that's done this badly. So, it's not good. All right, don't blame KJP. I blame yourself. I blame your team. I blame Anthony Blinken. I blame your economic team. And I would blame yourself, because clearly you can't lead. And so the poor CNN anchors, like, oh my gosh. I mean, all of these anchors are like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. They can't believe it. They don't understand it. But here's the reality. You know, it's easy. It's easy during good times to say, okay, I'm going to sit there and I'm going to worry about mean tweets. I'm not actually going to think about the policies that have put us where we are, because, hey, you know, everything's good. Everybody was coming out of COVID in November of 2020, and they felt like, well, I mean, they were sort of coming out, and they felt like, hey, you know, I've got enough money in the bank and I'm doing okay and things are great. And they didn't really, in my estimation, sink their teeth into the reality of what could be if you had somebody who didn't understand policy. So I kept warning them, like, do you want Jimmy Carter 2.0? Or do you want this continuation of successful policies? And apparently, people were okay with Jimmy Carter 2.0. Or better yet, they didn't really understand what they would be getting. I think that's the reality. They did not understand the magnitude of who they were voting for. He seemed like a nice guy, you know, grandfatherly, just hanging out in the basement doing those prompter reads now and then. And they figured that was okay than the guy who would tweet some things that they didn't like. Well, sometimes you got to dig a little deeper. And I get it. You know what? He's not perfect. And I get how much he polarizes situations and people, et cetera. But I'm just a policy wonk. So I care about things like tax policy. I care about economic policy. I care about border policy. I care about international policy. And therefore, I liked what I saw. And that was something that needed to continue. And when it stopped and it got totally reversed, what did you wind up with? A messed up situation internationally. You have 8 million people that have come over the border since Biden took control. And of course, you got inflation up the wazoo. So it's not at all shocking in any way, shape, or form that you have Donald Trump leading in the polls. I mean, people are kind of nostalgic. Make America Great Again now has a new kind of meaning. I mean, there is some nostalgia. And we really haven't had a president come back ever like this, right? And people are like, oh, yeah, you know, I could go back to that. I remember when it only cost this much to fill my gas tank. And I had a little extra money to go out on the weekends because my grocery bill wasn't so inflationary. And like things seemed pretty good. And I knew that the border was a problem. I mean, Trump was always going on about the border. And yet it was nothing like it is now. And the fentanyl use, all these things that are huge problems, right, for our country. These things have escalated in the last 3 years under one president. And his name is not Donald Trump. And so I am not surprised at all by any of these polls. We have another one coming out of CBS News, which shows something, again, very similar. When you look at those swing states, Donald Trump is continuing to lead. There was a poll just out of Bloomberg recently, same exact thing. 5 of the 6 swing states, Donald Trump was significantly ahead. The only state that he was really facing more of a challenge in was actually Michigan, and that was in part related to maybe some of the people edging towards RFK there. So look, you know, there's a lot of time between now and November, and the more they go after him, 91 counts for a criminal, the more they do this, the more I suspect a lot of people, including those in the center, are going to actually rally towards him. So one could anticipate that those poll numbers will be looking stronger and stronger for Donald Trump. So there's one person who doesn't really like that. Well, that would be Joe Biden and maybe some of Joe Biden's family members. Yeah, no, the family's not too happy because, you know, maybe that spigot's going to get cut off. I don't, got to be careful what I say. Allegedly, the spigot could get cut off. I got to be careful what I say because, you know, maybe Hunter will sue me. News today, ladies and gentlemen, just breaking just in, Hunter Biden is suing Fox News. Suing Fox News because, and specifically Fox News Digital, because they keep going after him in a pretty, in his estimation, vicious way. So this just coming in, who gets the story first? None other than his friends over at MSNBC. Let's listen.
ABC News has learned that Hunter Biden is planning to sue Fox News. According to a letter from his lawyers, the lawsuit is imminent. NBC's Ryan Nobles joins me now. Ryan, what more can you tell us?
Yeah, that's right, Chris. This is a letter obtained by NBC's Sarah Fitzpatrick that comes from the new attorney that Hunter Biden has entered into a contract with, and that's famed entertainment lawyer Mark Garagos. And in this letter, he sends a warning to the Fox News Corporation and Fox News Digital that they are preparing to sue the company for what they describe as conspiracy and subsequent actions to defame Mr. Biden and paint him in a false light, as well as the unlicensed commercial exploitation of his image, name, and likeness, and the unlawful publication of hacked intimate images of him. And this, of course, stems from the fact that, of course, Hunter Biden has been in the news quite a bit over the past couple of years because of his legal issues. And then, of course, the broad impeachment inquiry that's taking place by the House of Representatives. And essentially what Garagos is arguing in this letter, it's actually a member of his legal team is arguing in this letter, is that Fox is unfairly and libelously attacking Hunter Biden when there are no merits to many of the claims that they've been making about him. Now, this, of course, comes at the same time that Hunter Biden is facing legal issues of his own. He is on the verge of facing 2 different criminal trials, one in Delaware on a gun charge, another separate criminal trial in California that's related to tax issues. Both of those trials came as a result of a plea deal with the federal government that fell apart. So this is Hunter Biden going on the offensive. Of course, course, he is a favorite topic of Fox News, often brought up over and over again. And what is detailed in this letter is how they used many of the images that came from that so-called laptop that was discovered in the midst of the 2020 campaign that had a number of compromising and questionable and somewhat lewd images of Hunter Biden that have been used over and over again on Fox News. The argument here is that they were obtained illegally. They should not have been used in a forum such as this. And also, they're his property, and they're arguing that Fox News was using them inappropriately. So we'll have to see where this comes. Again, this isn't the actual filing of a lawsuit yet, Chris. This is just a threat to file a lawsuit. This is something that his legal team has warned Fox was coming at some point. So they are now letting them know definitively that this lawsuit could come soon. And Chris, we should also point out this comes against the backdrop of Fox, of course, settling that massive lawsuit with the Dominion Voting Company, who accused them of libeling them during the aftermath of the 2020 election. So this is Hunter Biden essentially taking that same course of action that Dominion did to try and rectify what he believes is a wrong that was done against him by the broadcasting company.
Wow. Wow. I mean, just major explosive news there. And, you know, I can tell you, having worked at Fox, there's an edict that's going out, and they're not putting this in an email right now, but there are middle managers going around to all the anchors right now into their offices and saying, hey, are you doing anything on Hunter tonight? maybe you don't want to do anything on Hunter tonight. I promise you. And, you know, the problem in this environment, and look, you know, anybody can sue anybody. I get it. But given that Fox folded on that Dominion suit and was not able to argue that they were rightfully within their sort of realm and in their zone to be asking questions, because after all, it was a major story. The fact that they settled that for $800 million, nearly $800 million, makes them kind of, it's like open season. I mean, you get Smartmatic also suing for $2.7 billion. I think it actually sets a really, really bad precedent for reporters, for journalists. And now, of course, if Hunter Biden can go after you, so Hunter is like, hey, I own those pictures. Maybe he does. Have you seen them? I don't even want to show you those pictures. They've been everywhere. They have been everywhere. So there's a question for you. Why go after Fox? Why not go after the New York Post? Why not go after Daily Mail? Why not go after all the places that have run those photos? Because we have seen them, frankly, too many times for my taste. And you know, does he own them? He might. Actually, I think that's probably the only argument he has. The rest of it, you know, let me just go through it because I'm looking at the letter here. they plan to imminently sue him for, quote, conspiracy and subsequent actions to defame Mr. Biden and paint him in a false light. The unlicensed commercial exploitation of his image, name, and likeness. I mean, again, they may, again, I'm not a lawyer, but they may have something there. And the unlawful publication of hacked images, intimate images of him. Okay, maybe the third one. So the unlawful publication of hacked intimate images of him. You really shouldn't probably publish those. In terms of his name, his likeness, that seems like it's kind of fair use, only because he is a public figure, whether he likes it or not. I mean, this is why I said if Joe Biden were a responsible adult, and he's not, he would have understood that the situation with his son was bad enough that he probably shouldn't be running for president, right? I mean, that's what a parent would do. People say to me, well, you know, how can he control what his son is doing? His son is a full-grown man. And I'm like, he can't, but he can control what he's doing. And so why would you put yourself so firmly in the public eye and make it open season on yourself and your family? Why would you do that? That's just what politics is these days. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. So there's no expectation of privacy. You know they're going to find everything out about your son. So why do you do it? Oh, because you've wanted to do it for 50 years and your ego is so, so big and it's so important to you. So I would argue that Hunter Biden, by way of his father, is a public person. He's a public person. And when you have situations where that son of the then vice president who was in charge of policy for Ukraine, I'm not making anything up here. This is all, I mean, this isn't even alleged, right? Like he had a job on the board of Burisma, and he was making a killing, like $83,000 a month, no board job. They don't even pay that much for a year. So he was getting that per month. And his dad was in charge of Ukraine policy. I mean, that kind of just seems a little suspicious to me, and I think it's fair game. As a journalist, I have a right to report that. And now you're going to threaten me with a lawsuit? I'm not at Fox anymore, so I guess that's good. Right? For multiple reasons. But really, I mean, Hunter Biden coming up with a very creative way. I suspect he's probably like, okay, can we channel Trump somehow in this? I want to be big and strong and look like I'm tough and in control. But there's a lot of stuff against him and stuff that has already been proven out, that they've already tried to get plea deals for. So you can try this. You can bring in the big guns. Mark Garagus, that is a name I haven't heard in a while. Have you? And I don't think you're going to get very far, but you might get a little bit of a tampering down on the story. That's what you might actually be successful with. And I think that's the goal here. I think they want to try and shut this story up because it's too problematic for Pops going into November 2024. I mean, we are not very far away. All the more reason, make sure you have subscribed to this channel. Make sure that you're hitting the bell. I'm here on YouTube every single day. We're live on Rumble as well and on Twitter. But do make sure that you subscribe, that you hit the bell, that you share, that you like, you do all those things so we can continue to get the word out here. It's just been amazing. We've been growing so quickly. It's all thanks to all of you guys. And it's been very organic and very real. And I thank you for that. I want to get to this media freak out, for goodness sakes, from Morning Joe to Donna Brazile. I mean, they're all flipping out because they're just terrified the Supreme Court's going to actually side with Trump on immunity. Like, they're really, really scared about this, ladies and gentlemen. We'll talk about that story in just a second. But first, balance of nature. I've been taking this stuff for a while now, and I love it. You guys have been so complimentary, so thank you for all that. I appreciate it. I do feel good. Hopefully I look good, and I do credit these guys with a lot of it. I take my fruits and veggie capsules every single morning now from Balance and Nature, and I've been doing so, really, I want to say like since January or so, really the start of 2024, I was like, okay, I'm going to start taking my vitamins in a more judicious way. And it's paid off in spades for me anyway. I really do feel terrific. I encourage you to check this out. I have a lot of people that I've met that have just come up to me now and said, hey, you know, I take Balance of Nature too. And I'm so happy to hear that. There's a ton of testimonials on their website. You're hearing mine, of course, but you can read about them on balanceofnature.com. Their phone number is 1-800-246-8751. So I encourage you to give them a ring and they'll tell you more. Again, 1-800-246-8751. I want you to use my discount code. It helps me. It helps you. Discount code Trish. 35% off if you use that, plus an additional $10 and free shipping. I do not think anybody else has a discount code quite as good as that. They better not anyway, right? Anyway, so Balance of Nature, 1-800-246-8751. Go to their website, balanceofnature.com. Check it out. Fruits and veggies, for me anyway, that is the way to go. Stuff is important. Very, very important. I kid you not. Anyway, turning now. A big story. The media is trying to brace themselves and you and their fans over there on the left for what could be a really positive thing for Donald Trump, but not just Donald Trump, for presidents for years to come, because it looks like the Supreme Court is actually going to side with him on some of this immunity stuff, as they should. I mean, if they don't, then, well, you know, presidents could be in a whole lot of trouble for all kinds of things. You could go after Barack Obama, could you not, for the drone strikes that killed two Americans in Syria inadvertently, mistakenly? Should he be held liable for that? What about the illicit substance that was found in the White House? Could Joe Biden be liable for something like that? I mean, you understand, like, you're opening a kind of Pandora's box. If you don't have a certain expectation of immunity, if that's not there, then you kind of could be in this open season environment. just like they have down in Latin America, where everybody's in and out of jail and then back into political office. Lula, great example, right? He was in jail. His vice president was in jail, too. And now he is back as the president of Brazil. We don't need that. We don't want that. We are not Latin America. We are the United States of America. And so the Supreme Court is very carefully looking at this. And now, whoo, people are freaking out. People like that guy over on Morning Joe, Joe Scarbo. He's like, I always respected the Supreme Court, maybe, until now. Watch.
And, you know, Mika, how surprised. You know, I've always been a big defender of the Supreme Court, federal judges. I believe they've been a great balancing act throughout the Trump presidency and beyond, and have usually ruled on these issues in a way that holds the country together. I'm not talking about abortion. I'm not talking about ideology. I'm talking about these Trump challenges. And yet, I must say, even I was stunned that even while I want them to clearly define the outer perimeters of official acts, I think this is an important exercise by the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. But the fact that some of the conservative justices sat there and allowed Donald Trump's lawyer to say that a military coup could be
an official act. Yeah.
A military coup could be an official act. He went down the list. He was asked, went down the list. In any past Supreme Court hearings, somebody doing that would have been derided and mocked and ridiculed here. Other than, I must say, other than Amy Coney Barrett, who was like, wait a second. Hold on.
Hold the phone.
I've got to say, the other Trump appointees and Alito and Thomas are, yeah, okay, well, maybe it is. It was jarring, and I've rarely jarred by the Supreme Court. I understand their role and what they do, and that there are very conservative and very liberal people on the court. But in this case, it was staggering.
Shocking.
Okay, you know, maybe they actually just wanted to hear the arguments. Can you imagine that? Can you not just hear the arguments? No, we got to shut them down before we can hear them. So anyway, they're all worked up. Whether it be Joe Scarborough, whether it be the ladies on The View, or whether it be Donna Brazile as well. I mean, they're all worked up. Everybody's freaking out at the possibility that actually there may be some ruling for some immunity. I mean, not full blown. I think they're going to actually try and be pretty specific and carve out some specifics here. But you know, consider what Donna Brazile. So this is Donna Brazile, kind of, you remember, disgraced Democrat strategist extraordinaire. I guess she still is a Democrat strategist extraordinaire. She was over on ABC News over the weekend, and she had something to say to George Stephanopoulos about all this. She kind of got into it with one of the attorneys for Trump, the spokesperson for the attorneys for Trump. And by the way, you just shouldn't do that if you don't really know what you're talking about, because This girl, Sarah, she just like mopped the floor with Donna Brazile. It's pretty great. Do we have the one where she's talking about, you know, I'm not really a lawyer, but blah, blah, blah. And then she's toast. Let's watch it.
I have to make a statement because I remember Bush v. Gore as if it was yesterday. I do believe that the Supreme Court is dangling to election interference by slowing it down. I'm not a lawyer, Sarah, but I had to listen to the oral arguments the other day. And what I heard again was they weren't talking about the facts of the case. They were coming up with all these hypotheticals. That's election. They should go ahead and allow this trial on January 6th to go forward in the district court. And we should know the results before the election.
Sarah, you are a lawyer. You were the Justice.
I disagree strongly with that. The Supreme Court decides questions, not cases. That's what they're supposed to do. They take issues of national importance. I will be surprised if this is not a unanimous decision coming from the Supreme Court that holds that it's not going to be about official acts versus unofficial acts. It's going to be something more like qualified immunity, where if it is so clearly outside the bounds of presidential authority, ordering the assassination of a political rival, of course, that is not going to be immune. But don't forget, 1982, this court held that presidents were absolutely immune from civil liability. It's why they had to take this case. It's not election interference. This is actually the job of the third branch of government.
Perhaps that's one element of the case, but it was remarkable how the many of the conservative justices refused to address what Donald Trump did on January 6th.
You heard that from from all of the justices saying this is not about Donald Trump. This is a rule that we're making for the ages. This is a rule that's going to have to apply to future presidents. You saw Justice Kagan asking many of the same hypotheticals as anyone else. So that's why I think this will be a unanimous decision. And I think people took snippets from that oral argument, not understanding that's how the Supreme Court does this. They don't make a rule for this case. They make a rule for all of the cases.
You can still argue the timing. I mean, the District Court of Appeal rendered its decision in February. Jack Smith said all along the special counsel back in December, go ahead, make the decision. And they're dragging their feet.
If this had
and
been let a normal case, Justice Donna, delayed, they would have put it on the merits docket for the next fall.
Is democracy denied? I mean, that is what's at stake here.
Selena.
So now the talking point is that this is somehow election interference by the Supreme Court of the United States of America, ladies and gentlemen. Think about that. Think about that. So it's almost like the Hunter thing. It's like, oh, you know what? They're coming after Hunter. I'm going to go on offense. I'm just going to sue Fox News. Now, instead of allowing Donald Trump to go after the Democrats for election interference because they're keeping him in court 4 out of 5 days a week instead of out campaigning, now it's, oh, the Supreme Court is engaging in election interference because they're slow on this case. Well, perhaps they actually just want to decide the case fairly, accurately. What is the pressure to decide it right now if you're actually deciding something for many, many years to come? Well, because they don't want Donald Trump running, period. End of story, right? Full stop. Well, Jack Smith and Fannie Willis and Letitia James and Alvin Bragg, they all could have brought their cases way back when, like 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. No, but they also chose a very specific time and place to be bringing these cases just as we head into the prime election season. So when Donald Trump talks about election interference, I actually think he has a leg to stand on. When Donald Brazil talks about election interference in the Supreme Court of the United States of America, I mean, that just makes me want to throw up. What kind of patriot is she? And now you're going to throw the Supreme Court of the United States under the bus for your own political reasons? Unacceptable. But this is what they're doing. This is what they're doing. I mean, she's just so shocked that she had to go out and buy a National Enquirer this week. Watch her here. We have some sound of Donna Brazile. Let's see if we can pull that up. Donna Brazile talking about how she had to go buy a National Enquirer this week. It is how she's just so shocked that we're even talking about a guy that's in jail. How could that ever be possible? We get some guy who's in jail or should be in jail in her estimation, how he should be in jail. And you know what? That's, I guess, perhaps Drew is just working on getting it. There we go. Okay. He's going to have it for you in just a second. But in other words, Donna's like, I can't believe this. She's so incredulous about the whole thing. My gosh, this person who really should be in jail, blah, 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 blah. He's running for office. Here we go. Take it away, Drew.
Donna, as you've worked in several presidential campaigns, it's hard to wrap your head around a presidential campaign that is playing out in criminal court.
George, I've never been here before, and I never thought in the years, almost 30 years that I worked in presidential politics and campaigns, that I would ever have to figure out some talking points when your opponent, in the case of Donald Trump, is sitting in court all day and not on a campaign trail. So you have very little to react from. And what I see coming from what I often refer to as the messaging points from the Democrats is, hey, go ahead and point out what Joe Biden is doing for the American people, how he's lifting people out of poverty, how he's providing jobs, getting industries back on their feet, and don't get into the salacious, lurid details of this court case. And that's been great. You know, I went out and bought a National Enquirer because I thought Catch and Kill was about, you know, trapping a mouse in the house or figuring out if there are rats around you. I never thought it was about burying stories. There's so much legalese in all of this that I think it's just passing over everyone's head.
Do you guys miss her on the Five? I guarantee you Gutfeld doesn't. Anyway, look, she can be funny. She can be funny at times, but don't forget sort of the direction that she's coming from. Here she is saying, oh, I'm so shocked. I mean, I just can't believe this. This is a criminal thing, this, that, and the other. They've made it that way. Okay, let's be very clear. They have made it that way. And they have chosen for these cases to be coming forward at this point in time for a very specific reason, because they are actually, in my estimation anyway, really trying to interfere with this election. And it's wrong. And it's un-American. It's not who we are. And no matter how much they try, what's amazing about it all is, again, Donald Trump still leads in the polls. So you guys, you know what? You can try and influence this in however many different fraudulent ways you want. I think at the end of the day, American people are going to come forward and say, we want a better country. We want better policies for ourselves and for our children and for our grandchildren. So that'll be the day of reckoning. And then you got to wonder, will they buy that? It's a fair question. And it's one that we need to talk about. I mean, look, 2020 was a mess. One of the things that really struck me going into 2020 was just 6 weeks or so before the election, Hillary Clinton went on her friend's podcast and said she was advising Joe Biden not to give up no matter what the votes were. If it was in any way, shape, or form close, he could not give up. He had to hold on for dear life. And yet when the other side did that and held on for dear life, oh my goodness, you know, it's a federal crime, literally, right? And various state crimes as well, as we saw in Arizona. So it only works one way. And it's really important that, and I hope these polls, as I've said, are underestimating actually how successful Donald Trump might be come November. It's really important that he win by a wide enough margin so that he can actually just say, you know what? I won this thing fair and square. End of story. This is a big part of what Lara Trump is trying to do right now, because look, it's not easy, right? It's not easy when the other side has actually spent a lot of time and a lot of resources getting people registered, having these absentee ballots, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so she knows that she's got to fight fire with fire. And the good news about Lara, and I'll tell you this because I know her, and she's a workhorse and she's committed. And I mean, the girl like runs triathlons and the whole bit, right? So she's a fighter. And she's organized, and what she's doing along with her co-chair there at the RNC is they're trying to make sure that they have enough people at all the polling places across the country to just be eyes and ears on the situation, because you want to make sure that everything is above board and everything is done right. And if you've got to do some ballot harvesting, and you got to make sure that you get the absentee ballots in, et cetera, that you do all that stuff ahead of time, because look, the Democrats are doing it. And while we all want a national holiday for voting, do we not? I mean, here, right? That would be absolutely, we should have a national holiday for voting, and people should engage in their right to vote. And this is a very patriotic thing. The fact that we don't have it is kind of amazing, but it is what it is. And so if you're really going to fight back in a meaningful way, you've got to rely on all the resources that you have out there. And I think Lara is trying to do this. You got to hear her here, because she's taken no prisoners. She means business. Listen to what she's up to right now at the RNC.
Well, under 2 months, I mean, I think it's been 4.5 weeks now since Michael Whatley, the chairman, and I have been at the RNC. And obviously, we've been working really hard. I think the most recent thing to report is that we are working hard on election integrity. And we just announced last week that we have 100,000 committed people who are going to be trained as poll workers. So, Eric, leading up to this election, I think we can all see the most important thing, aside from getting out the vote, is protecting that vote. We now have the ability at the RNC not just to have poll watchers, people standing in polling locations, but people who can physically handle the ballots. We want people all across this country.
Can we do this? I want to hear. This is really fascinating to me. So
yeah.
You have 100,000 people who are they? I think I saw paid at one point, but whatever, irrelevant. But so they will be stationed inside polling places? I didn't even know you could do that. Tell us about it.
Yeah. So there was a moratorium for about 40 years on the RNC actually training people to work in these polling locations and the tabulation centers where the mail-in ballots come in. And last year, the judge who implemented that passed away. So that was lifted. And that gives us a great ability as we head into what I assume everyone understands is the most important election of our lifetime. So we have this ability. These are volunteers. Most of these people, protectthevote.com. If people want to join our team, we train them to actually work in these polling locations. And think about how much better off that makes us in terms of transparency, Eric. We all know 2020 was not all on the up and up. People had a lot of unanswered questions. We can never repeat that. So in addition to these poll workers, we're going to have lawyers in all the major polling locations across the country. We have lawsuits in 81 states right now. We won about a week and a half ago a huge lawsuit in the state of Pennsylvania. The Democrats, of course, were trying to make it easier to cheat and wanted to take the dating off of mail-in ballots. We won that, and that means we have precedent in every state. We can apply the same measures. So we're working hard to ensure election integrity because that is the most important thing we can do right now as we head into 2024. We have an election integrity division for the first time at the RNC. So you are going to see a marked difference as you head out to early vote. And I want to tell everybody, go early vote. I know we like to go vote on election day, but we have to make it too big to rig, Eric. We need everybody out voting as soon as they can, and then taking people from that day up to election day to go vote is the most important.
Wow. Wow. So she means business. And I think there's going to be a lot of changes. I didn't realize that you couldn't have people there at the polls watching for the last 40 years. So that's a major change. And it's a major change for the RNC that they're actually training people, 100,000 people thus far. And I suspect more people as you watch that. And as she's out there and she's talking about this, you're going to have more people that want to be trained so that they can also help with the polls. Listen, election integrity is critical. It's kind of all we have, right? So we want to make sure that everybody feels good about this. And then whoever is the winner, there you go, right? But you've got to have a fair fight. And so you've got to also have the perception of a fair fight. I can't underscore that enough, just how important it is for people to feel like their vote will count, that their vote does count, and that there's no shenanigans going on whatsoever. So if it takes lots of people from both sides to be there as eyes and ears on the ground, then so be it. That's what we need. I again think back to sort of what has transpired in these third world countries, specifically in Latin America, which I'm very familiar with. And it's kind of this sense that the system is rigged. And when people feel like the system is rigged, now whether it is or not, but when they feel like it is, that is a real kick in the stomach. And so we can't allow that for America. It is not right for our country. It is not right for our people. And so I applaud what Lara Trump is doing. She means business. You know who else means business? My friends over at Americans for Prosperity. You guys, you hear me talk about them a lot. You remember we did the interview with the guy who bought the Bidenomics.com website. This was fantastic because for all the TikTokers they have over there in the Biden White House, nobody had the brilliance to actually just go and buy Bidenomics.com. So our friends at Americans for Prosperity got it, and they have had a lot of fun with it because they're actually putting out the truth about what Bidenomics.com really means. I mean, it cracked me up. Earlier, we're hearing Donna Brazile say, oh, you know, they should be talking about all this great stuff he's done for the economy and for workers. And I'm like, what planet are you on, lady? Because that's not the Joe Biden I know. The Joe Biden I know has done nothing to help middle-class Americans. Middle-class Americans are slipping as a result of Joe Biden. Well, the AmericansForProsperity.org folks team knows this. They know this inside and out. And I'm really excited because one of their big issues right now, it's not just the economy and getting the economy back on track, but they're also looking at the inflation within the healthcare sector. I've had so many of you reach out to me and say, oh my gosh, you're not going to believe how much my healthcare is now. I can't believe how much I'm paying in healthcare expenses. And they can be really, really debilitating. I know that. And, you know, that's got to change, right? We're a nation that's pretty wealthy, and yet of all the wealthy nations in the world, we're ranked like 38 in terms of our health. Like, we're not getting the best bang for our buck, if you would. And so it's a complex problem, but AmericansForProsperity.org, they've got a really cool solution. Lauren Stewart is going to be on the show tomorrow. She's actually spearheading this operation, and she's got a fabulous plan for how we can really start to think about coming at healthcare in a better way. Like, okay, you want to keep your Obamacare plan, go for it, keep it. But there's a better way out there, and we can offer more in terms of consumer choice and opportunity. Of course, you got to get the White House, you got to get the Senate, and you got to get Congress. So not always so easy. I want you to go check out this site, not just Americans for Prosperity, but Prosperity is Possible. Prosperity is Possible. Drew, we can make that again, I think, for later in the week as we show people that. But prosperityispossible.com. And this is so uplifting, because what you discover is that there are people that are committed to really doing the right thing and giving us Americans more say in everything, from the economy to the healthcare we use and to our overall prosperity. So again, I encourage you to go to prosperityispossible.com. We're just so glad to have a partnership with them, and portions of the show are brought to you by them. They're just a fantastic bunch, and I'm just delighted to give them a plug. Again, Prosperity is Possible. Oh, turning to a big story. We got a war going on within the conservative commentator space. Tell me it's not so. You got Ben Shapiro and Tucker Carlson just at it. Hey, disagreement is healthy, right? Well, these two, Mediaite did a great story on this. These two are really, really coming down the warpath. Ben especially. You know, one of my friends said to me, did you hear Ben Shapiro last week? I was like, gosh, no, I missed that. Oh my gosh, he was just all over Tucker. He spent like 20 minutes going after Tucker. So I was like, wow. Well, it doesn't entirely surprise me. And if you look at the article, it's in part because Candace Owens was fired, and then she went on to Tucker's show and maybe said some things. I actually listened to it. I don't think that she was really heinous in any way or disrespectful to Shapiro, but he did say, I think her behavior during this has been disgraceful. He was talking about her analysis of what was going on in the Middle East. And of course, I share this sentiment with him. I think we're both very pro-Israel, and Candace Owens was not. And Tucker, perhaps, is not as pro-Israel, certainly, as Ben Shapiro is. And so this has become sort of a thing. And he just took him to task on his show. And I think we have some video. Maybe we should even play the clip. Do we have anything from perhaps Tucker speaking with Candace Owens that we can show folks? Because it's been like a success in issues. I mean, there's just been a whole lot of things that I think Ben and Candace didn't see eye to eye on. And of course, Ben runs a private company, and maybe he feels like he wants more people that have a more similar viewpoint surrounding him. It's his prerogative as a private business owner, right? Nothing wrong with that. But Tucker's like ultimate free speech, free speech, free speech. Of course, you don't necessarily have to have free speech on Ben's business site, right? And I think that's what sort of, you know, not to, I don't really have a view on this other than to tell you, more commentary, the better. Like, Candace can go on her own, and she should. And Tucker's already out on his own, as he should be. Ben Shapiro's brilliant. I mean, he recognized this before any of us did, right? He went out on his own at a really great time. It took me a while to catch up to speed, but I'm out here on my own. I really do think that anybody who has a viewpoint, is passionate about that viewpoint, and can communicate that viewpoint should be on their own. It's a no-brainer. And you know what? We're not all going to agree with each other, nor should we, right? Part of a healthy dialogue. And I think conservatives get this. Sure, Ben went off for 20 minutes on Tucker, and Tucker will probably respond with some kind of thing in kind. And hey, if we're lucky, they'll have a debate together. And that would be awesome. Actually, that would be really awesome. Think about that. Because I think that Tucker was like debate champion of the year or something in high school. And Ben might have a similar accolade in his past. So that would actually be a debate that I think we would all turn in to see. And I would encourage that debate. I think this is a real difference actually between liberals and conservatives right now. I do think that while we may all as conservatives have differences of opinions, we still ultimately respect one another. And I guarantee you that even though Ben may be really mad at Candace, and Candace may be really mad at Ben. And again, Drew, if you have the sound, I would like to show it, because I thought that she did a pretty decent job in characterizing what went down. And people should see that. I didn't think that this was too hateful or too off the charts. Let's take a listen.
There's also, I can't help but notice that your views reflect mine, I would say, pretty much. I'm an American. I was horrified by what happened on October 7th. I think it was pretty strange. I don't really understand how it happened, but innocents died, and that's awful. And I hated watching that. And I feel so sorry for the Israelis. who were killed. However, there's an emotional response that is disproportionate, I think, on the part of some commentators. I mean, our country's being...
See, I disagree with this, but...
Of young men whose identities we don't know, who probably don't even like America, and they're now living here. Over 100,000 Americans die every year of fentanyl. I've known a couple. Those are real tragedies. I've never seen anything like the emotion from any commentator around those tragedies as I'm watching about a foreign tragedy. I think that's odd.
Okay, do we have any of Candace's commentary as well that we can show people? And we can talk a little bit about that because it was a little bit all over the place what he was saying, but we'll get back to it in a second. Okay, we're still trying to pull that up. So as Drew pulls this up, I'm just going to explain the last soundbite that we were listening to where Tucker was saying, you know, why are they all of a sudden so concerned about this? I would say in defense of Ben Shapiro, you know what? He's been darn concerned about the border for some time, really concerned about the border. So and very concerned about all the illicit substances coming into our country. And so it may not be entirely a fair characterization to say, oh, you know, he's all concerned about October 7th, but not concerned about this other stuff. I think he's been really, really concerned about all of this. And it just so happens that one is in the news right now. You also have it in the news as a result of what we're seeing in university campuses all across America, where students somehow feel emboldened to spout so much hate against Israel and against Jewish students. And Jewish students obviously feel really uncomfortable. I mean, I'm not Jewish. I'd feel really uncomfortable. And I went to Columbia University. I would not be comfortable walking into the library right now because you see the tent city that's effectively spouted up. The headline on the New York Post at this moment is all about that tent city. And these kids won't move because the president of that university, for whatever reason, has made a decision, ladies and gentlemen, to have drawn this line in the sand. It's like Obama all over again with Syria, for goodness sakes. The red line in the sand. You must move. This was like last Wednesday or Thursday at midnight. You must move. And then guess what? When they don't move, she doesn't do anything. She doesn't do a damn thing. So they stay there and they continue to intimidate. Things have now gotten increasingly violent. You look at some of the video that's come to us out of Emory University over the weekend. This shouldn't be happening. Why is it happening? We talked about Soros and his role, $300,000 that he has donated to the organization that believes in revolution, not reform. So none of this is a very good place for America to be right now. And it makes all the sense in the world that Ben Shapiro, specifically as a Jewish person himself, should be out there talking about this. But he has talked very forcefully about some of these other issues, too. It looks like Drew doesn't have the Candace Owens tape for us, so we'll hold off on that. But I can just paraphrase for you guys. Listen, she went on the show, and she said, we had a whole bunch of differences of opinion. You know what? We didn't agree, for example, on the vaccine thing. We didn't agree on the situation with Israel and Gaza, et cetera. And ultimately, it made sense for them to part ways. And so I think that actually, frankly, from both sides, and I've heard both Ben and Candace comment on this, none of it has been too over the top. They've been pretty respectful of each other. And ultimately, as a conservative, I can just say this. We respectfully want to have a difference of opinion. Now, we may not want you working for us if your opinion is so vastly different than ours, right? And if we can't have it sort of coincide with what our sponsors stand for and represent. Remember when Tommy Lahren left Glenn Beck because they had a real difference of opinion on the pro-choice, pro-life issue? I mean, this happens, right? It happens. But ultimately, I do say this about all of us. We are way better. You are way better at hearing more sides. It makes me actually think you're smarter. I really do. Like, I actually think conservatives are by far smarter because they're able to digest more information and not become overly emotional about it. On the left, however, they get so emotional that it gets to the point where they can actually justify some kind of revolution in their eyes, some kind of dangerous, frankly, revolution. And they can, unfortunately, in some cases, justify violence. And that's just wrong. And it will always, always be wrong. So Ben Shapiro, Tucker Carlson, trouble in paradise. You guys are not always going to agree with each other. I don't always agree with either one of you, frankly, or Candace for that matter. Look, and that's part of the beauty of being a commentator in America. We don't always have to agree, but we should always be willing to hear, to listen, and to debate, respectfully debate the other side. Turning now to Joe Biden. who does not want to respectfully debate the other side. Joe Biden, ladies and gentlemen, actually thinks the other side, the MAGA side, is bad, really bad. And so he went to this big shindig in Washington, D.C. I've been many times before. It's called the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And, you know, the White House Correspondents Association puts it on and all the media goes and you go and you see all your friends and you listen to some comedians and you usually listen to the president. I got to tell you, you know, Obama was pretty good at it. Biden, not so much. Trump was, well, Trump didn't want to be there. Remember that? He's like, I'm going to go have my own party because the media is not really, say, the media that I would like to engage with and be hospitable with because they hate me. And they do. He was right on that. They absolutely do. Well, this is like Biden's home turf, right? He's set. These are his peeps. So why not use this comedic, fun night to have some kind of public cry about how much better they all are than the Trish Regans, I guess, or Tuckers or Bens or anybody else's of the world, right? You guys are the best and the brightest. We love you because you're on our side. So you got to rise up and you got to help protect the country, protect democracy. I don't know how you're protecting democracy when you're going after someone with 91 different counts. I don't know how you're protecting democracy when you've got Letitia James swooping in out of left field to say, nope, I don't think your property's really worth that. I think it's worth this, even though the bank decided along with Donald Trump to do a loan because they all thought it was worth that. And there were no damages. Everybody paid back what they were owed. I don't know how it's really protecting democracy when you say you are not allowed to say that coronavirus originated at a Wuhan lab. Like, you're not even allowed to talk about it. You're not even allowed to entertain the idea, even though pretty much every three-letter agency has since come out and said, yep, that's exactly what happened. All but the CIA, they remain divided. So there's just been a whole bunch of things, a whole bunch of things. Yet Joe Biden goes there and talks about how, you know, they all need to come together and protect democracy. Look at how this seemingly light, pleasant, cheerful, funny evening took a, I don't know, highly political, I'd say dark turn.
All
he looks terrible, by the way.
The anniversary of January 6th, I went to Valley Forge, and I said the most urgent question of our time is whether democracy is still the sacred cause of America. That is the question the American people must answer this year. And you, the press, play a critical role in making sure the American people have the information they need to make an
informed
decision.
Can you stop it right there, Drew? That was kind of the key moment, right? He said, you, the free press, play a critical role in protecting that democracy. Remember the one that I went to Valley Forge for J6, you know, they're still stuck on J6. Don't forget, guys, all the video you ever saw was all shot by Nancy Pelosi's daughter, primarily shot by Nancy Pelosi's daughter, Alexandra, the documentary filmmaker that somehow managed to be there, even though NBC News and CNN and everybody else was not allowed in. She gave her tape or sold her tape to CNN, who then billed it as a CNN exclusive and then played it for you in a loop over and over and over again, just so it would sink in. Just how scary the day was and the moment was, despite the fact that now Supreme Court justices are kind of saying, you know, we don't think you have a whole lot of there in terms of locking the people up that were there for what they believed would be a peaceful protest. Anyway, let's let the president, who looks absolutely terrible, by the way, continue.
A defeated former president has made no secret of his attack on our democracy. He said he wants to be a dictator on day one and so much more. He tells supporters he is the revenge.
Okay, I got to pause it again. Dictator on day one. That was about, okay, I'm going to dictate that we actually have to seal the border shut. He was joking around, but he said, yeah, I'm actually going to dictate that one. Okay, continue on, Mr. Biden.
He said he wants to be a dictator on day one and so much more. He tells supporters he is the revenge and retribution. When in God's name have you heard of another president say something like that? And he promised a bloodbath when he loses again. We have to take this seriously. 8 years ago.
Okay, pause again. I mean, he's saying all these things in front of the media, nonetheless. That's like, yeah. Bloodbath was actually referring to what was going to happen with China and tariffs regarding cars if they built a facility in Mexico. He was talking about an economic bloodbath. It's very different than what he's talking about. I mean, this is the problem, guys. This is the problem, ladies and gentlemen. Nobody in that room is willing to call him out. Nobody's actually willing to say, wait a second, what are you referring to? They're taking words out of context and they're using it against him. And they figure if they just keep repeating it and repeating it and repeating it and repeating it, you will believe it. But you know what? You just look at the polls. No one buys it, Joe. No one buys it because you keep telling us your Bidenomics is working. You keep telling us the economy is just great and everybody else knows the reality. Sorry, Drew. I can't watch the rest of him. Let's move on to something that was supposed to be funny. So the Washington Correspondents' Dinner is supposed to be a light and breezy event. It's supposed to tell some jokes. Supposed to have a good comedian in there. They brought in a guy from Saturday Night Live, I think, who's married to Scarlett Johansson. Don't quote me on that. I'm way better at my Federal Reserve governors than I am on my actors. But anyway, Colin Jost, he had one funny joke, and Biden actually sort of laughed at it. I want you to see the president's face. Maybe we can even freeze frame it as it happens. But this is Colin's one sort of funny joke when he's talking about the illegal substances, remember, that were found at the White House.
It's also wonderful to be back in Washington. I love being in Washington. The last time I was in D.C., I left my at the White House.
His illegal substance.
Luckily, the president was able to put it to good use for his State of the Union.
Okay. You know what, Colin? That was funny. And you see the president, we just stopped it. He's like howling. Okay, good. Joe, I bet they told him. I guarantee you that script was run by everyone in the White House. I guarantee you he knew that joke was coming and he was told. I'm surprised there's not a sign they're holding up. Laugh here. You know how he says pause when he's not actually supposed to say pause because just the prompter says pause. That was like laugh here, laugh here, laugh here. So he did laugh. That was a funny joke, but it was the only one, right? It was the only one. It was the only one because comedy is sort of dead. Comedy is no longer funny. I'm not the only one saying this. Interesting interview that came out over the weekend with Jerry Seinfeld, who, you know, is a comedian. And he was talking about how you can't be comedic anymore because the craziness on this PC front has taken over. And so there's no way to laugh at any of this. Like it's gone too far and people need to laugh and they need a little comic relief in their life. But you get the crazy PC lefty woke mob that won't allow it. And that's a problem. It's a problem for society. I want you to see Jerry Seinfeld commenting on this very issue. It's kind of like a truth bomb.
Nothing really affects comedy. People always need it. They need it so badly, and they don't get it. It used to be you would go home at the end of the day. Most people would go, oh, Cheers is on. Oh, MASH is on. Oh, Mary Tyler Moore is on. All in the Family's on. You just expect it. There'll be some funny stuff we can watch on TV tonight. Well, guess what? Where is it? This is the result of the extreme left and PC crap and people worrying so much about offending other people. Mm-hmm. When you write a script and it goes into four or five different hands, committees, groups, here's our thought about this joke, well, that's the end of your comedy. They move the gates, like in skiing. Yeah. Culture, the gates are moving. Your job is to be agile and clever enough that wherever they put the gates, I'm going to make the gate.
Gates. Think about that. I mean, we're happy, Jerry, that you're going to move the gate, but not everyone can, and people have run into various challenges, including my friend Seth Dillon, who is the CEO of the Babylon Bee. So I was with him this weekend at an event sponsored by the Yankee Institute, which is just fantastic, guys, by the way. They're all about fiscal conservatism. There we are, the Yankee Institute, empowering the opportunity for prosperity. If you get a chance, check them out. Very, very active in Connecticut and really trying. This was their Champion of Freedoms Gala. The Yankee Institute just working hard to make sure that everyday folks really have a say in things, right? That the individual matters. And so they gave out a number of awards. I was blown away. One couple actually got an award. They run a school, and it's tuition is $5,000 per kid. They've got some 200 kids there. I mean, can you imagine? Like, public school. I mean, what are they charged to educate a kid? It's probably upwards of $50,000. Anyway, they don't even take any voucher money because that got into all kinds of political problems. And they just, you know, they rely on support from places like the Yankee Institute. So it was really neat to be there. And I got to talk to my friend Seth, as you can see. And we're talking about sort of the challenges that he has faced over the years there at Babylon Bee. And it's really kind of discouraging what he's been up against. But, you know, look, we're all fighting a very similar fight here. I want to just tell you, though, that he, like Jerry Seinfeld, is like, look, we're not going anywhere. We're here. It's like me. Like, I'm not going anywhere. Big, big reason for you to hit the subscribe button right about now and the like and the share and all that, because we need voices that are different than the quote unquote woke mob. And we need to have a way to get through to you. And they haven't stopped. I mean, they're lucky that Elon bought Twitter, of course. X. Apparently, as he tells the story, Elon tried to reach out to them. And he said this on the show a little bit, but I'll fill you in case you forgot. Elon tried to reach out to them, but their account had been locked. And so he said, is it true? Like, you guys are really banned and you're locked? And they couldn't even respond to him. And so it took a couple of days. They were like, how do we get in touch with Elon Musk? And eventually he tracked them down. Somebody gave him their number, and he talked to them, and he said, you know, I may just have to buy Twitter. And that's exactly what he did. He bought Twitter. So we joked that it was to save the Babylon Bee, but really it was really just to save the freedom of speech, really, our First Amendment, which is so critical and so vital and so dear to having a fair representation of all Americans. It's critical. So the Babylon Bee is back, and they're back in spades, and they were never gone, right? It just meant you had to go and find them. And it's what you kind of have to do with me. You have to come and find me and tell your friends about me and all that stuff. But I was cracking up because, you know, they do a good job. Granted, they make fun of the left a lot, and sometimes they make fun of the right as well, and that's kind of funny. So here's one on Kristi Noem. Kristi Noem was in the headlines this week because she published a new book in which she talks about killing the family dog, like shooting the family dog herself, and kind of equates it with her ability to make tough decisions. And I don't know, I'm sorry. I don't think that one's playing in Peoria very well. And I know a lot of you like Kristi, but this is going to be a little tricky for her. So Babylon Bee had some fun with it. Kristi Noem clarifies killing puppies makes up only 3% of what she does. So, you know what? Kudos to them for being able to put some laughter around what we're all dealing with right now. We need to be able to do that. We need to be able to laugh. I agree. I agree absolutely with Jerry Seinfeld. Kristi Noem in the hot seat, ladies and gentlemen. This is after she admitted killing the family dog in a brand new book about her life. And then she doubled down on it. You're looking at a tweet that we just put up on the screen where she doubled down on it, talking about how she actually not just killed the family dog and the goat, but also three horses. A few weeks ago, she did this. We love animals, but tough decisions like this happen all the time on the farm. Sadly, we just had to put down three horses a few weeks ago that have been in our family 25 years. If you want more real, honest, and politically incorrect stories that'll have the media gasping, pre-order, no going back, is her book. You can see the headline in The Guardian, and keep in mind, you know, you get the rather liberal press cherry picking some of this stuff, but I'll read you the passage. Their headline was Trump VP contender Kristi Noem writes of killing dog and goat in new book. South Dakota governor includes bloody tale in campaign volume and admits a better politician wouldn't tell the story here. Okay, that's interesting. Maybe she knew that it was sort of a weird thing to tell. Here's the story. The excerpt from the book itself. Cricket, that was the dog that met its unfortunate end, courtesy of Kristi. Cricket, the untrainable dog, Noem writes, behaved like a trained assassin. Ooh, so dog was a problem. When Noam finally grabbed Cricket, she says, actually, this is coming to us, I think, via the Daily Mail? I'm quoting them. She says, the dog whipped around to bite me. Then, as the chicken owners wept, you see, Cricket had killed some chickens. Noam repeatedly, she apologized. She said she wrote the family a check for the price they asked for and helped them dispose of the carcasses littering the scene of the crime. So those would be the birds, the chickens that Cricket, the untrainable dog, had killed. Through it all, Noam said, this is an AP article, by the way, that's where I'm reading from. Noam says Cricket was, quote, the picture of pure joy. I hated that dog, she wrote. She thought that the dog was untrainable, dangerous to anyone she came in contact with, and less than worthless as a hunting dog. At that moment, Noam wrote, I realized I had to put her down. So she got her gun and led Cricket to the gravel pit. And, that was that. That was the end of Cricket. Then apparently there was a smelly goat who was driving her crazy. So that was the end of the goat, too. And, well, look, this may not play so well in Peoria. I'm just going to say it like this, you know. And then there was the dental thing and a few other. You know what? She, I know you guys like her. I know you do. But it's not going to be easy. And the left will use this however they can. Maybe the doubling down thing is good. Because if you double down and you really own it, maybe you can come out ahead. Although, here we go. She said, I can understand why some people are so upset about the 20-year-old story of Cricket, one of the working dogs at our ranch, in my upcoming book, No Going Back. Little plug for the book. Buy the book. The book is filled with many honest stories of my life, good and bad, days, challenges, painful decisions, and lessons learned. What I learned from my years of public service, especially leading South Dakota through COVID, is people are looking for leaders who are authentic, willing to learn from the past, and don't shy away from tough challenges. My hope is everyone reading this book will have an understanding that I can always work to make the best decisions I can for the people in my life. The fact is, South Dakota law states that dogs who attack and kill livestock can be put down. Given that Cricket has shown aggressive behavior towards biting people, I decided what I did. And then she goes on to say, whether running the ranch or whether I'm in politics, I have never passed on my responsibilities to anyone else to handle. Even if it's hard and painful, I followed the law and was being a responsible parent, dog owner, and neighbor. As I explain in the book, it wasn't easy, but often the easy way isn't the right way. What do you think? Should she have taken it to the vet and done, you know, sort of the humane process of going to sleep? Or should she have taken it to the gravel pit? I'm looking because I know you guys. I know you love her. Which brings us to our next story. Who is going to be Vice President of the United States? Who is going to be Donald Trump's pick for Vice President? Has this hurt, this story about the dog? Kristi Noem, it may have. I will just say this. So my sources tell me that, you know what, Donald Trump doesn't care about whether or not he's got a woman, whether or not he's got someone who's black, whether or not he's checking any boxes at all. All he cares about is the person that's the best person for the job and the person that can help him get elected and then do the job, right? So the name that you haven't been hearing a ton, I want to now tell you about. So there's one individual out there who happens to be the junior senator from Ohio. His name is J.D. Vance, and he has been an enormously successful venture capitalist and entrepreneur. I mean, this is, and I get back to, you know, my own bias, I think, as a business reporter, is that I would really like to see people who understand business, people who understand the economy in this seat. He's well known for the book that he wrote that was a memoir, Hillbilly Elegy, that was all about sort of growing up in Kentucky and Appalachia and talking about sort of the values that were so important there. And how the economy was really passing people by. So patriotism, love of God, appreciation for family, the work ethic, all of these things that are so historically and traditionally American were very much on display for him growing up there in Appalachia. And he tells the story and the tale of how he eventually got out. And so getting out and being as successful as he has become and looking back, he really wants to make sure that we preserve the values that you have in places like Appalachia, while simultaneously offering those people there, those hardworking, patriotic Americans, a new path forward. And so he's got a tremendous platform in that sense to run on. And I think that he gets along extremely well with Donald Trump. He wouldn't suck all the oxygen out of the room, right? Like, that actually matters with Trump. That's why I don't think that Tucker Carlson is really in the running, nor does he want it. And I think JD, Ohio's an important state, right, might actually be someone that he's going to take a really hard look at. My source is telling me this anyway. Let's take a look at some recent clips from JD. Here he is talking about, Drew, do we have the one where he's talking about Ukraine and how he thinks about Ukraine spending and how we need to be prepared for battle, but we kind of just have to be pretty judicious in what we're doing. Let's play this, because he was on Fox over the weekend, and I think it's worth you hearing. His profile is going to get higher and higher.
Some of the very people who shipped America's manufacturing base overseas to China in the first place, who weakened our ability to manufacture our own weapons, are now the same people who are saying we can get involved in three wars at once. The math doesn't make sense. We're stretched too thin. We've got to focus. And the last point I'll make on this is, if we focus on East Asia, if we focus on containing the Chinese, the Europeans can step up in Europe. Germany still, after Donald Trump demanded it, still doesn't spend 2% of GDP on defense. A lot of the NATO countries have allowed their own industrial might to atrophy. So why are Americans subsidizing European security? We should be focused on our own problems, and that's mostly China.
Okay. In other words, we've got a lot of problems over here. Maybe allow Europe to take some of the lead. Now, a lot of people don't like that because, oh, we've been the hegemonic power of the world, et cetera, et cetera. But at least from a financial perspective, maybe just from a financial perspective, I'm sure that we have the wherewithal and the capability to offer some strategic advice, but financially speaking, is it in our interest? What is in our interest, though, and he's written about this most recently in the Wall Street Journal, is making sure that we're prepared for this new level of warfare that's coming, right? Like, you know, any way you slice it, things are changing. And we need to be ready for that, because right now, and you can look at the Institute for War's study on this by my friend General Jack Keane, if a war broke out with China today, there's a good chance we wouldn't win it. We just wouldn't. We're not prepared. We don't have the right weaponry. We've allowed this to kind of fall into decay. So before we go out there and we try and engage in every battle and fight every single thing, maybe we actually ought to be thinking about, how do we fortify ourselves internally? How do we make sure that we have the best equipment here at home? Because you want to make sure that you're prepared. And we're just not. I mean, warfare has changed drastically. You have only to look at TikTok, which is in and of itself a kind of warfare. I believe that. No matter what Donald Trump is saying on that right now, I think he just wants to buy it for himself. It is a kind of warfare, because they've been able to, kind of like Radio America was, right, in the communist era, they've been able to sort of infiltrate their propaganda and manipulate our youth with those algorithms. And so it's a scary thought. I think J.D. Vance gets this stuff. The other thing I'd say about J.D. Vance is he understands how critical issues like our border are as well. I think we have another soundbite. This is from Shannon Bream's show over on Fox from the weekend that I want to play you.
You referenced the, and we'll discuss more of that with Senator Murphy coming up, the other side of that conversation, but you referenced the campuses. Some in your party are calling for the National Guard, for the president to activate them. Others very much have the worry of what happened at Kent State. No American wants a repeat of that. How should this administration be responding to these protests?
Well, look, I don't know if you need to call in the National Guard. Maybe you just call in the police, right? This is often framed as a free speech debate. Everyone accepts that there are time, place, and manner restrictions. These guys have the right to peacefully protest, even if we criticize the message. They do not have the right to set up tent cities on our public spaces and turn our cities into garbage dumps. That is what I think we should not allow, and I think the police should be able to handle that job pretty easily.
Okay. Yeah. He's absolutely right. So in other words, you need that kind of hardline approach, something that the president of Columbia University was not willing to take. So I told you that the standoff was going on at this moment at Columbia. It's the headline in the New York Post right now. I can also tell you in the Wall Street Journal, the headline is at this moment, Columbia in standoff with pro-Palestinian protesters as end of school year nears. Here's the answer, guys. You're not going to graduate. No, you're not going to graduate. We're going to expel you, because you know what? We said you cannot disturb the peace. We shouldn't be shutting down classes so you can have your rally. That's not going to work. I mean, there's freedom of speech, and then there's taking over a college campus. You have taken over the college campus. You have made Jewish students and any student who doesn't agree with you feel incredibly uncomfortable. And so you need a president at that university who can stand up to this. 21 House Democrats are now calling on the school to disband the encampment that helped launch this movement at other U.S. colleges. Think of that. Columbia now, the epicenter of this. The president of the university, interestingly enough, was born in Egypt. That's neither here nor there, but she did live 5 years in Egypt before being raised here, and I guess also in the UK, because she did a lot of work over there. She's an economist by training. I'm just astonished and disgusted. I mean, by the way, it hits home for me because it's my alma mater, but wow, bad, bad stuff. Quick check on the markets. We had a market that ended mostly positive today. Dow up 0.3%, S&P up 0.3%, NASDAQ Composite Index up 0.3% as well. And so that's a little bit of good news there in the markets. You know, if you are trying to understand how to invest, where to invest, I can help you with that. Rob Horton, my colleague over at 76 Research, can help you with that. We have an entire platform all set up for you right now. And if you subscribe to one of the more model portfolios, you're going to get 10 to 15 stock picks that we really, I mean, he's done a ton of research on this as well. And we really fundamentally believe that these are really good commitments for you. So take a look at 76 Research. Go to the model portfolios. They have one for an income builder, right? Because you want to build income in your retirement. So you want those dividend plays. You want companies that are going to keep up with inflation. There's an inflation protection portfolio as well, speaking of inflation, of which we have a lot. And importantly, there's a resilience, American resilience and growth portfolio for you there, as well as the 76 report. The 76 report has interesting stock picks in there for you, including, oh gosh, one of our stock picks, I won't give it away, but it just totally, I think we came out with that. What Rob is not, if he's watching the show, maybe he can text me. Like, I want to say like maybe a month ago, and it's just been on a tear way ahead in the S&P. So all the more reason, go to 76research.com, sign up for the 76 report, get those model portfolios, and let us help you really plan for the future. One more story I want to talk about before I let you go today. Did you guys see this? This is something. This is like classic Trump. I couldn't believe it. And you should have seen the look on Bill Barr's face when he heard this. I'm just going to go to the clip because the CNN anchor, she does it well. She shows the tweet, forgive me, the truth that Donald Trump put out, and you just you're gonna see his face. She's talking here with Bill Barr, former AG. Watch.
He responded in response to you saying you'd vote for the Republican ticket. Wow, former AG Bill Barr, who let a lot of great people down by not investigating voter fraud in our country, has just endorsed me for president, despite the fact that I called him weak, slow-moving, lethargic, gutless, and lazy. Based on the fact that I greatly appreciate his wholehearted endorsement, I am removing the word lethargic from my statement. Thank you, Bill.
Yeah. It's classic Trump.
You know, he took that in stride. It's interesting because he's saying, you know what, I don't think he should win, but I'm voting for him anyway. So that's kind of an odd thing, Bill, to say. Just a little, right? Like, if you don't think he should win and you don't think Biden should win, then maybe you just abstain. I don't know, just going out on a limb. Like, if you actually are saying you don't think that Trump should be near the Oval Office, why are you still voting for him? You can see why Trump maybe had a little frustration. You know, these are people that want to have their cake and eat it too, and talking out of both sides of their mouth. Weak, slow moving, lethargic. And what was the only thing he decided to remove? The word lethargic. So kind of classic Trump, funny. Those are those mean tweets, right? The mean truths or the mean X's. What do we call them now? Over on X. I'm getting confused. We have so many social media platforms. But the reality is this, you know what? He does have the ability to fire off some things that maybe you don't like to see, maybe you wish you hadn't seen. But ultimately, it comes down to one thing, and that's who can do the best job running the country. He certainly made mistakes. I think it was a mistake to shut down the nation when we were in the throes of coronavirus during March of 2020. I tried to warn him. The warning got me in a little bit of trouble, but my point was they were always going to politicize that, and you needed to do what you could to fight this thing by maintaining a strong economy, right? And I think that the aftermath that we've seen is all related back to that. You look at how the Fed had no choice but to increase the M2 money supply at such a drastic rate, some 40%. Now, they did have a choice, right? They didn't need to keep the spigot open for so long, and yet they did. They did, and they printed and printed some more. And you had a sort of a reason, if you can imagine, a reason for Congress to say, okay, we're going to print trillions of dollars. We're going to give it to here, there, and everywhere. And so it was wrong. It was wrong to do, and there are a lot of mistakes that were made. But I would say this, and I know that you're not necessarily all fans of the vaccine, but hey, Donald Trump actually got rid of the red tape that enabled us to have the vaccine, which enabled the economy to reopen. So as much as they want to hate him, he did do a lot of things right. And you got to give credit where credit is due. And I have a feeling that is exactly what people are doing right now. And that is why there is a very good chance that you're going to see it will be historic. Donald Trump back in the White House come 2025. Mark my words. Great to see all of you here today. Thank you for joining us. We got a packed show, a really, really packed show. I love seeing all of your comments. Don, welcome back. Funny comments on the horses. Isaac, great to have you. I'm happy you like the new background. The new background is something I've been working on for a while. So really good. I love seeing all of you. Alicia, welcome. Charles in Charge, welcome. Everybody, welcome. Make sure that you share this and communicate that I am here. You are the vehicle for doing that. Again, this is all organic. This is all real. So spread the wealth. Let people know I'm here. And hey, maybe we'll even get to 275,000 by Friday. What do you think? I'll see you tomorrow.